This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Raul Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, which I know is a much anticipated podcast that many of you look forward to, judging by our numbers. We do follow our numbers, our demographics, in terms of the number of podcasts that are downloaded, and if there's evidence that our weekly Q&A with Layla is a favorite for many of you. Without an essential ingredient, which is Layla, this wouldn't be Q&A with Layla. Hi, Layla. How are you?
I'm an ingredient.
You're an ingredient. It's like you're like...
That's good for a nutritionist.
Well, you know what? You're like Robin Givens to Howard Stern. You know, I'm Howard, like me being Howard Stern, and you're the Robin Givens. And you actually have a great laugh, just like Robin Givens.
Oh, really?
But more so than, you know, lest you feel it trivializes your role here.
Being an ingredient.
You're more than just a laugh track. You're, you know, a vital contributor to our weekly Q&A with Layla.
So,
let me stop that line of discussion before I get into too much trouble. So, radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, and we got lots of questions.
Yeah.
Each week we assemble questions that you email to us, and we do our best. We endeavor to answer them to the best of our ability. Before we get to questions, though, like one of the big stories of the week, just in time for summer, when a lot of people are contemplating a little more downtime, a little more leisure time.
Mm-hmm.
Headline, World Health Organization recognizes burnout as a medical condition. The World Health Organization has the first time recognized burnout in its International Classification of Diseases, ICD, which is like the Bible of diagnostic classifications.
Mm-hmm.
They've made fun of it because you actually have, it's a numeric thing, like 152.53-27A.
Yeah.
It means that you are injured, you have a facial injury caused by a bird, and you can actually subfractionate that caused by a crow or a parrot or a hummingbird.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you could actually really slice and dice illnesses based on that. And that's useful for reimbursement, because I guess if you get hit in the face by an eagle, you probably get more reimbursement for treating that than if you get hit in the face by a hummingbird.
Right.
You would think so, right? It's like...
But if you don't code it properly, forget about your reimbursement.
Exactly.
I mean, if you got hit by an eagle, but you put down the wrong number and it was actually a hummingbird, well.
And one of the deep, dark secrets is that the American Medical Association makes the majority of its income not from membership, but by distributing books, and used to be books. There used to be like these telephone books with diagnoses.
Yeah.
Now it's all done online with software. It's very expensive software for doctors' offices and hospitals to purchase the software, and they have a lock on this software.
It's
that gives you the diagnostic codes, which are the magic codes that open up insurance reimbursement to you. Well, now burnout is going to be, I think, so what's going to happen is that half the people will have, you know, cancer, heart disease,
diabetes,
and then the other half will have burnout. We'll just use burnout as a diagnosis on everybody else, because technically everybody suffers.
So what do you suppose the pharmaceutical industry will do about this?
That's interesting, because is there a drug for burnout?
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's called vacation.
Right. Vitamin V.
So, but here's what they, you know, first of all, you need criteria for this because, like, you know, people come in and it's like, how are you feeling today? I'm a little burnout. Well, a little burnout probably doesn't rise to the level of a medical diagnosis of burnout. So what is burnout? The syndrome is characterized by three dimensions. Feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion. Well, that's easy. A lot of people have that. Increased mental distance from one's job or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to one's job. And number three, reduced professional efficacy. So,
hence the burnout, reduced professional efficacy.
Right, which
you're,
is
you're less effective.
But I would also add a dimension to that, which would be, if I were to define it more broadly, it would be interfering with personal relationships. You know, to the point where, you know, the syndrome where, you know, how was your day? I don't want to talk about it. You know, or like, you know, just unable to sleep or unable to function, causing sexual dysfunction, causing, you know, various forms of organic disease.
And maybe social isolation because I'm too tired to go to that game.
Yeah.
I don't want to go. I'm going to stay home.
Right.
And veg.
But
or something.
There is actually a syndrome in Japan, and I forget the name of it, but it was, it's a syndrome that was noted when the very conscientious workers there would put in these incredible hours and they would actually die on the job. They'd find them, you know, with a face plant in front of their workstation, you know, suffering from death due to overwork. And not due to physical overwork, but due to just exhaustion, mental exhaustion and so on. So, you know, what's interesting about this is that this is an edict from the World Health Organization, which is the international predominant agency for monitoring the health of humans on all over the globe and all over the planet. And the very profession of medicine actually puts burnout on a pedestal. It, the whole medical training paradigm is based on, it encourages burnout. I mean, we were, you know, we were taught like, you know, you're going to be working really hard. You're going to be pulling all-nighters. You're going to be, you know, stretched.
You're going to work a 20-hour shift and then you're going to be on call because that's what what residents do.
You're going to be stretched to your limits. So they've, and what's interesting is they've done the measures since I was, there was no reform until the Libby Zion case in New York. This famous case in New York where this young woman who was the daughter of a prominent journalist ended up in the emergency room with something. You know, she was on psychiatric medications and she became like dehydrated and disoriented. And her case was mismanaged to the point where she was killed. And she was killed because she was admitted at a bad time when the place was understaffed and the workers were beleaguered and they made mistakes because, and they made errors which should not have been made because they were burnt out. And so that led to a move.
It's like driving drunk.
We know that from experiments that sleep deprivation causes impaired judgment.
And it's worse to drive with sleep impairment almost than
alcohol.
Than alcohol, which is interesting.
So the movement was undertaken right after, you know, usually all good things happen after I'm somewhere. You know, like I go to like Columbia College and they have this lousy swimming pool from like the 1920s. And right after I leave, they build this beautiful, like amazing Olympic swimming pool. It's just
Great. That's because you complained about it, right?
Right.
And you made things happen.
Right. But I was not the beneficiary of that. And the same thing happened in my residency where, you know, I swear there were weeks where I would work, you know, to say an 80-hour week, would be, that would be light week. You know, like 16 hours a day, 5 days a week would be, you know, and if I had a whole weekend off, that was unprecedented. I had one day off, maybe. So now they have these work limits for residents and interns. And what they found is that a lot of places are, they're pushing back against that because they say that part of the experience of training is continuity of care. And continuity of care means that you stay with a patient from the admission right through their care. And, you know, leaving them involves also some inefficiencies in patient management because you have to explain very quickly to somebody else
who
already has
over.
Their own patients. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm signing this patient out to you. Let me explain what's going on. It's very complicated. In 3 minutes, I'm going to tell you what everything about this patient. But I've been with this patient for the last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
I've been, so mistakes can happen as a result of that. Patient care is diminished sometimes because of that. Because it's, where's my doctor? Oh, he's off today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's the one who understands my situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there actually have been some surveys that show that with the reduction in hours, it's a little more humane.
Yeah.
But the education the doctors are getting is not as comprehensive or good. They're not getting, I mean, the whole idea is like this immersion, you know, and a little bit of a trial by ordeal. And the idea is
baptism
if you can make these, it's like Navy SEAL training. It's a
yeah.
little like that.
Hell Week.
Yeah, it's Navy SEAL training mm-hmm. in the sense that they are taught that if they can make decisions under enormous stress, like they put them into freezing surf mm-hmm. and they have them log roll or something like that,
right.
or they have them, you know, they push them into a pool of icy water,
mm-hmm.
Blindfolded and, you know, with bound, you know, the hands bound. And
after waking them up after 2.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah, and then, you know, if they can get out of that, then it's like, okay, we're putting you on a mission to, you know, Afghanistan to abduct some, you know, Taliban leader in the mountains
yeah.
or something, you know, or, you know, to, you know, targeted assassination or something. That they can do that and they will withstand it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
a little bit the theory of medical training. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is because yeah. I think doctors are left sometimes cynical, burnt out, impaired.
Yeah.
There's a lot of suicide. There's a lot of drug dependency among doctors.
Yeah.
Not good stuff, you know.
Not good stuff. And think about it. You know, if you were about to have surgery, do you want a resident who has not slept in the last 25 hours working on you?
It's interesting what a patient today said,
yeah.
you know, she had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, I noticed you had, you know, you live in New York, but you had your surgery done at the suburban hospital, Greenwich Hospital.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, my doctor wants to operate there because there's no residents there.
Huh.
He was going to do the surgery himself. He didn't have to teach. He didn't have to have share. He was gonna make sure that the surgery was gonna be done by an experienced expert surgeon with no responsibilities to share that surgery with anybody else.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. Okay. And her surgery was successful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Herpanosine Skin Support. Your skin is your largest organ. Treating and preventing serious, unsightly, and at times painful skin problems must be done from the inside. That's why for over 28 years, people worldwide have experienced safe and positive results with the award-winning vitamin formula, Herpanosine Skin Support. Herpanosine utilizes the finest quality gluten-free non-GMO vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, as well as antioxidants. 11 powerful and proven ingredients, which work together synergistically to support skin health from the inside out where it counts. It's manufactured in an FDA-licensed facility. It's backed by science. Healthy skin starts from within. Get Herpanosine Skin Support online at diamondformulas.com or by calling 888-467-4200. Use the coupon code Hoffman for free shipping at diamondformulas.com or call 888-467-4200. Herpanosine Skin Support.
Okay, what's our first question?
Okay, we've got an email from Michael. Hello, I'm a big fan of Dr. Hoffman. Question, please. Layla has an article about artificial sweeteners raising blood sugar levels and contributing to weight gain. She provides no evidence for her assertion, so I'm confused. She states, scientific studies have shown that aspartame, which is NutraSweet or Equal, adversely impacts blood sugar and insulin levels in the same way sugar does, and that these artificial substances keep metabolism in fat storage mode just about the same way by spiking the hormone insulin. But she offers no evidence or reference for the study. The reason I long loved Dr. Hoffman is because he used science and critical thinking. Where is that with her on this issue? Thank you, and certainly very respectfully, Mike.
Okay, well, let me just comment on that. It's a little bit of a stylistic thing. Is that when I write articles, mm-hmm. I'm often hyperlinking them.
Right.
You know, with studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, realistically, most people just read the article. And they don't click on the hyperlinks. But I think there's a different level of where some people may want to say, oh, I want to see the original study that that supports what you're saying here. So that's a little bit of a, you know, without using a disparaging term, a wonkiness that
they want to see the source.
You want to do a deep dive, and they want to see it. And so,
show me the footnotes.
Right. But stylistically, I think what you're writing is articles that are more news you can use, conversational. And you know, mm-hmm. for some people, they just find that's a lot direct and an easier message to assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's stylistic, but it's a bit of a challenge to you. It's like, okay, you know, I'm from Missouri. Prove it.
Right. Prove it. Yeah. Well, here are some of the studies that I have for you, Mike. Some citations. Here's one, actually, from all the way back in diabetes care in 2009. Diet soda intake and risk of incident metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes. This was in a multi-ethnic study of atherosclerosis. And what they found, they concluded that consumption of diet soda at least daily was associated with significantly greater risks of select incident metabolic syndrome components and type 2 diabetes. There's another thing about artificial sweeteners. They play another trick. And this is coming from Harvard Health. Research suggests that they may prevent us from associating sweetness with caloric intake. And as a result, we crave more sweets.
Right. So in other words,
then we get overweight and diabetic and so forth
I call that, it's kind of like it's like pornography for your taste buds.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, show me the pictures, but, you know, you're not going to deliver.
Right.
And therefore, they will sort of hyper-excite you without delivering you the calories, and you'll be looking for love in other places.
Right. You know? Right. And this coming out of, let's see, this is July in 2017, cite as CMAG. I'm trying to figure out what CMA this particular article.
It's a reference?
Yeah. Cite as CMAJ in 2017 in July.
It's a journal. Okay.
And they conclude that they've seen that observational data suggests that routine intake of non-nutritive sweeteners may be associated with increased BMI and cardiometabolic risk. So, and there are numbers of other citations, Michael, and thank you for your...
The CMA Journal.
Yeah.
Cover my... I don't even know. CMA Journal. Canadian Medical Association Journal, I would say.
Right, Canadian Medical Association.
Okay.
Would
because
be that.
CMA has a different connotation.
Right. Right. And besides that,
to sum up, you know, there
these
several
are just
lines
two
of
many.
Yeah.
So I mean, I could spend a podcast talking about all these different.
Elaborate. And mm-hmm. but so several mechanisms. One is that, you know, they're a tease.
Yes.
And they get you to crave carbs more.
Yes,
because they sort of rekindle your interest in sweets,
mm-hmm.
but they don't deliver. And your body is saying, oh, my goodness, I'm expecting a sweet carbohydrate to come into my stomach and be absorbed in my bloodstream, but it's not there yet. So I'm going to have my soda, and then I'm going to find some carbohydrates to satisfy my sweet craving. But also there's the microbiome angle on that, too. Mm-hmm. Did you touch upon that at all?
No, I didn't, but I basically have a list of different citations here
that
talk about
the disturbance in the microbiome, because it's sort of toxic to the microbiome, and the microbiome may govern metabolism in some way. There are recently, I think, in the study that I talked about in one of my newsletter articles, there was the it was an interesting study. It was about unprocessed food makes you fat. Right?
Yeah.
But what's interesting is in the they had a group that had unprocessed food, and they had a group that had processed food. Now, you might think the processed food would be, you know, Big Macs and Cokes or Big Macs and milkshakes. But actually, what they used as the beverage was diet drinks. They used diet fruit juice and diet, you know, non-caloric, sweetened beverages. And that was in the processed food. And what they found is that the people ate 500 more calories per day.
Yes.
When confronted with, so it seems to stoke the appetite.
Yeah. And even as far back as 2008, in the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health, Splenda alters gut microflora. This is 2008. And increases intestinal changes in these cytochrome P50 male rats. So some of these are rat studies. They talk about other dangers of artificial sweeteners. So much of them are generally regarded as safe, GRAS, but there are no, there's really no, not enough conversation about the causes of cancer. FDA approval have ruled out cancer risk for the most part. However, those studies were done using far smaller amounts of diet soda than the 24 ounces a day consumed by many people who drink diet soda. What we don't know is what effect these chemicals will have over many years. So, and then there's also a bigger list.
And that's why, you know, in one of my first challenges while I was on the radio, I got, at the time, the company that made NutraSweet was Searle Labs, Searle, which is, I don't think they're in existence anymore. And so I was talking about all the harms associated with that.
Yeah.
And usually I just would blather on about whatever I wanted to blather on about with nobody pushing back on me. But I got, the station was sent a missive by the this big, you know, company, Searle, saying you have an irresponsible person on your radio station, you know, talking trash about one of our safest products.
Yeah.
And we would like to have equal time to rebut that. And so we had like this, you know, professor emeritus expert on, and he was talking about all the safety studies. And I said, well, you know, let me put it to you this way. You know, you have grandkids? Yeah. How old are your grandkids? Well, they're 4 and 6. I said, so how many NutraSweet sweetened beverages would you think is safe for your grandchildren to drink? And he said, oh, they're perfectly safe. I said, well, like one can of NutraSweet soda per day? He says, yeah, I would be fine. I said, what about three? Well, that, you know, and I got him to hedge. I got him to hedge. And in a very sort of human terms, when he thought about it, he started thinking, I can't really say that they can have an unlimited amount of those beverages per day. And, you know, so all that scientific varnish that substantiated the safety of that went away when it went to very human terms. Like, how much can a small human person consume of that stuff safely? And, though, that guy has long since passed away, because that's 30 years ago. This guy was in his 60s at the time, 70s maybe. You know, here we are, decades later, and we're recognizing that this is not the stuff we want to feed our children.
Exactly. And just on a case-by-case basis, in my practice of now over 15 years, every time
we see cases,
every time I've put a patient on a low-carb diet, they lose weight, but they don't lose the amount that should be, you know, lost. Then they finally reveal to me that they've been drinking a can or a glass
of
Diet Coke a day.
Which is a popular strategy.
It's like,
as long as I guzzle this stuff, you know, it's sweet, it's satisfying.
Yeah, and there's no carbs and no calories, so
like
I can drink this.
It's like a free ride.
Right.
It's a free ride.
But what it does is it spikes the hormone insulin, which is what I talk about in that article. Yeah. And I've seen it happen over and over in, I would say, hundreds of case studies by now. Once we remove the diet soda, the weight loss resumes. Layla, the insulin normalizes.
The fact that I'm agreeing with you now, I think, is going to reassure this listener.
Yeah, Michael. But I thank you for this thoughtful email.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was, intended as a knock. It was like, show me the evidence.
Show me the evidence. Yeah, there it is. Okay. All right. Oh, and by the way, there's a longer list of NutraSweet aspartame side effects besides diabetes, which is cited in weight gain, brain fog, joint pain.
There's also the Russell Blaylock viewpoint, which is that NutraSweet is metabolized into phenylalanine. Mm. And so people with phenylketonuria cannot have NutraSweet.
That's right.
But it's also it's thought to be a neuroexcitatory amino acid. Mm-hmm. And it therefore may kind of blow out the brain circuitry and lead to neurodegenerative disease. Now, that's an unproven hypothesis, but it's plausible.
I remember when NutraSweet first came out, and it was the days I remember of watching Oprah, and she had somebody out there in the audience who was drinking about a gallon and a half of iced tea a day sweetened with NutraSweet, and she was found to have seizure. So there was this excitotoxicity happening in the brain.
That's when Oprah was doing edgy things.
Yeah.
And she remember that she did that thing about meat, and then she was pushed back against by the Cattlemen's Association, you know, so it was like, you know.
Yeah.
But she wasn't too popular at all. I don't think she I don't think she does those kind of things anymore.
Yeah. No, you know? She doesn't. I don't think so. Anyway, I don't have cable, so I don't know.
She's hardly on.
Okay, we have an email here from Russell. Okay. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm 71, and my urologist suggested I get a biopsy after my PSA fluctuated from 8.5 down to 6.3 and then back up to 8 in about 6 months. And my PCA3 urine test was a 32, which should be less than 25. It was a 32. I've spoken to some men who said their biopsy was very painful and others who said it was simply annoying. A friend told me that his doctor used an anesthetic, so it didn't hurt. Should I ask my urologist if he's going to use an anesthetic? Of course you should ask.
Yes.
You should ask for it. Also, my prostate was soft and the MRI was negative. So how does the doctor determine where to take the biopsy samples
That's
from?
That's really a good question.
Wow.
And if I might do this. Let's broaden that into a discussion that we're going to start in part two, which is prostate diagnosis, you know, and what can be done to reduce the need for prostate biopsies, which, you know, after all, I mean, they're invasive. They can be painful. Even if they're not painful, they can be, we'll go into it.
Yeah.
We'll go
into it. Okay. In part two.
Part two. So, let's ask our audience to fast forward to part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Radio program at AOL.com's destination for questions. We'll be right back.